Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on July 7th, 2018. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Vipalasa Sutta, a sutta that explains fabrications. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace.
Is everybody comfortable? It's not too cool?
That's perfect.
That's great.
Are you kidding after what we've been through?
Wow. Too cool? That's not possible.
It was hot. This is a sutta on explaining fabrications. Most of the suttas that I use and reinterpret are from Thanissara Bhikkhu's scholarly translation. Some of them are from a few other folks, but mostly from Thanissara. And this one is. He uses the word perversion instead of fabrication, which I found kind of odd, because there's no other reference anywhere to using that word in relation to anything the Buddha taught that I could find in his writings or anybody else's. So, and I really don't, I have no explanation as to why he used that word, although they are similar in effect. The root Pali word is sankhara, and sankhara means, and again, depending on the context, it could mean conditioned, as in a conditioned mind, conditioned by things that are troubling and outside of the realm of reality. Another direct translation of sankhara is fabrication. Another word that might be used is a concoction, meaning a putting together of things that aren't naturally put together, such as putting together discordant facts and creating something that we state as reality, which is really what a fabrication is, as the Buddha uses a fabrication. We're creating assumptions or conclusions about ourselves in relation to the world that is rooted in ignorance. In other words, there's no true foundation, and so it's fabricated. It's made out of nothing, and like the Buddha would refer to that, the substance and the effect of a fabrication is like foam on the ocean. There's nothing to it, except because we believe that it's true, because we fabricated it ourselves, it becomes our reality. That the using the word perversion is interesting, but I can understand why Thanissara would use it, because it's very similar. Perversion in that sense is something that is it's still a conclusion that one comes to, rooted in misrepresented or misunderstood facts or a misunderstood reality. I guess the phrase a perversion of justice is a good example of that. A perversion of justice is something that has went through a certain justice system, but based on a misinterpretation and misrepresentation of facts and law, so it's a perversion of justice. And so in that way, I could see how Thanissara would use the word perversion. The only reason I'm going into this long explanation is because some people will reference Thanissara's translation and question that. When you relate, the reason why fabrications is a much more appropriate translation from sankhara is that in the Buddha awakened to dependent origination, which states from ignorance as a requisite condition, mental fabrications are formed. So from that thought construct, from those fabrications, then follows all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering that results in what the Buddha described as the first noble truth, as dukkha. So we have to understand that it is our mental fabrications that are rooted in ignorance that must be recognized and abandoned. And that's what the sutta gets to, the Buddha's words. Friends, there are four fabrications of perceptions of the mind and of views, and those three references are to a singular quality of mind, a confused mind state. These four fabrications are confusing permanence with regard to impermanence, confusing pleasant with regard to stressful, confusing self with regard to not self, and confusing the attractive with what is unattractive. So this is what we do from a lack of understanding of reality. We confuse what is permanent with what is impermanent, and we also confuse the impermanent with the permanent, including our views of self and who and what we are. We make what is temporary, what is impermanent, permanent, and we confuse ourselves. This is a fabrication of the mind. Do you see the connection? Because of the wrong assumption based on wrong views, we assume that what is impermanent is permanent. And since we think that it's permanent, we cling to it. And the same thing as what is pleasant. And a good example of that might be, it could be anything that we decide that is pleasant in our lives, but because we misunderstand impermanence, we insist that what is pleasant be permanent in our lives, and so it becomes stressful. So from that initial ignorance, what is normally just a pleasant experience, because of our confusion, we've made it stressful. Do you see where I'm going and where the Buddha's going and how that's rooted in fabrications? And you could also say, giving credence to Tanasarabhika, it's a perversion of what's occurring, isn't it? The same thing with the next fabrication of confusing self with not self. The Buddha used the term anatta to simply mean that the views that we're using to describe a self to ourselves and to the world are wrong views. They're not a self. Let go of the views. But because we believe that they describe a self and that they're who we are, we have confused self with not self. We've made a self out of nothing. Another phrase might be, we've made a self out of whole cloth. There's nothing really there except we believe it so. And because we believe it, that's our experience. And it relates to the whole understanding that you cannot establish a permanent self in an impermanent realm. And an awakened human being understands that what is ultimately simply a reference point to what's occurring is a self that is always in a constant process of becoming. You can never, physics will tell you that even a physical body is not permanent at any point in time. It's always in a process of evolving. In a physical way, it's evolving from birth to death, isn't it? But in each and every moment, there's millions of cells that come into existence and blink out of existence. The Buddha recognized this, by the way, 2,600 years ago without any science. So you can't even describe yourself in any way as permanent. And when you go from the physical to the mental, every one of our thoughts is impermanent too, isn't it? Confusing the attractive with regard to the unattractive. A very simple explanation of that, there's many things that we can think of in our lives that at one point we thought we really loved it or we wanted it, and as we grew older or our views changed, we realized we don't want those things anymore. It might just have to do with food. Our taste in food and our taste in clothing change. But at one time, I don't get into the story of how I used to dress in high school, but I used to think that was pretty attractive clothing. I grew up a little bit and realized that was unattractive. But at a certain point in time, I was the coolest dude around. I looked like a fool, but I looked like Superfly, actually. Our views are as impermanent as everything. And when they're fabricated, and when at some point in time I thought that I needed to look a certain way to be appealing to the world, those views, looking back on it, they were foolish views, and they weren't rooted in anything that had anything to do with reality, except at the time I believed them. And when the orange suit with the purple tie wasn't available, there was a lot of stress in my life. I'm using a somewhat silly example to simply make the point that we confuse what is attractive with what is unattractive. David read this sutta, who comes on Tuesday nights. And he was relating this to the Buddha's teachings on the contemplation of the charnel grounds, which is taught in both the Anapanasati Sutta and the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha teaches us to consider the human body that we're so enamored with and that we go to great lengths to make attractive to everyone, including ourselves. And we become attached to this form because we're so enamored with it. The charnel grounds teaches us, it's a contemplation of understanding what's going on in the physical body. And it's very descriptive, and it gets into the fluids in the body and what the excrement and the urine and all the rest of it. And as it, you get deeper into that contemplation, you think about a body once it dies and how it starts breaking down and maggots start eating it. It's a rather tough explanation, but the whole point is so that we understand that the thing that we think is so attractive is actually unattractive in its reality. It doesn't mean that we should be disgusted with ourselves or hate our bodies in any way, simply to understand that what we're so enamored with is prone to decay, just like everything else. And so what is it, the profound understanding that we develop from understanding what is unattractive as unattractive, is we stop holding on to it. We stop creating views that this is what I am. And then we recognize that what we are in a physical body, united with a mind, is always in a constant process of becoming. What does that mean? What does that lead us to? Well, for one thing, it allows us to continue our physical life without fear of what's coming, because we understand what's coming. At some point, this is going to end. You can't sustain it. But also, it gives us an understanding of what's important right now. What's important right now is not to continue in self-referential views and be so concerned about how I'm holding myself out into the world. What's most important is to awaken. Because at some point, I'm going to lose the opportunity to awaken, won't I? This is going to be gone. The Buddha continues, these are the four fabrications of perception of the mind of views. These are four qualities of mind that are not fabricated. Knowing impermanence as impermanence. When the Buddha gave his first teaching, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, to the five friends that he had been wandering around northern India with, he concluded that short sutta, the first time that the Four Noble Truths were taught, and Khandana declared all conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation. He understood sankhara, conditioned thinking, and he understood, and by the way, sankhara relates to impermanence. It's conditioned thinking. The Pali translation could go as it's conditioned thinking based on a misunderstanding of impermanence. Misunderstanding impermanence and thinking what is permanent is impermanent creates stress and suffering in our lives, doesn't it? But once we understand that all things are impermanent, every life situation, every difficulty, every joy, every physical accomplishment, every mental accomplishment, I'm talking about intellectual achievement, they're all impermanent. And when we get down to a well-concentrated mind, when we can see the mind as it's flowing within the body, united, a mind united in the body, we realize that each and every thought is impermanent. And when we can truly understand that at its most profound level, we'll stop holding on to our thoughts. Because it is our thoughts that we use to describe ourselves to ourselves, thinking rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. A liberated mind is a mind that is no longer ignorant of the way things are. The mind is still thinking, isn't it? But it's thinking based on reality. It's not fabricated thinking. That's what the Buddha's referring to here. Knowing impermanence as impermanence. Knowing stress as stress. And if we know stress as stress, the Buddha often talks about and describes the problem of self-referential views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths as that mind will cling to stress. But when we know stress as stress, we won't cling to it. Why? Because we understand it. Why would we attach ourselves to something that will be stressful to us? We simply won't do it because our minds have awakened. Our minds are fully mature. Knowing not self is not self. We understand the views. We understand the views that we've created, fabricated, to make a self that is not based in reality. to make a self that is prone to confusion, deluded thinking, and ongoing suffering. Once we let go of the views, a peaceful and calm mind prevails. The question comes up often, and it came up in the last couple of weeks. So what happens when I let go of all these views of not self? Because it seems like if I let go of all the views that I'm using to maintain a self, there'll be no more self. That's kind of a reasonable conclusion coming from that point of view. But when you realize that every one of those views that you're using to establish a self are not based in reality, you're not letting go of anything. It's the holding on that creates the veil of illusion that blocks one from living life as it's intended in reality, free of wrong views. So once we have the direction and the path and a mind concentrated enough through shamatha vipassana meditation, we're able to recognize and abandon every one of these wrong views, every one of these fabrications, and we're able to see impermanence as impermanence, stress as stress, and the wrong views that we use to constitute a self as not self. And we simply let them go. And the fourth is that knowing what is unattractive is unattractive. We simply understand it. And that doesn't mean that we stop enjoying life. What it does mean is that we stop clinging to things that cause confusion in our lives, that cause stress in our lives. And then each and every moment of life is meaningful. Whether it's something that we would have judged as stressful or unstressful or good or bad or pleasant or unpleasant, that won't matter because we're now living our life. We have united the mind and the body. And then life itself is meaningful. And we understand that because of having a human life, there's going to be sorrow, there's going to be regret, and there's going to be great joy. We'll experience all of it without the need for it to be any different than it is. And in that way, we live each and every moment as it's intended, as it's authentic, as it's most skillful to live. Is that clear? And that's where the Buddha's teaching is going, is to allow us to live our lives as our lives unfold without the need for it to be any different than it occurs. Because we understand the nature of human life. The Buddha continues, these are the four qualities of mind that are free of fabrications. Perceptions, the mind and views are fabricated when perceiving permanence and impermanence, when perceiving pleasure in what is stressful, when perceiving self in what is not self, and when perceiving attractiveness in the unattractive, which is simply clinging to fabrications. These beings are destroyed by wrong views. These beings have lost their minds. These beings are bound to ignorance, clinging to ignorance, clinging to wrong views. These beings will find no rest, wandering aimlessly from birth to death. And he's talking about karma and rebirth in a very practical sense, that we'll spend our lives wandering from one moment rooted in ignorance, and because we have done nothing to eliminate that ignorance, we give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance, wandering aimlessly in ignorance. Another word that is often used is wandering in sankhara. There's that Pali word. Wandering in this world of delusion, this world of illusions, the world of fabrications. So think about the profundity of that. Because this is occurring. This is occurring here, right now. The Buddha would often describe this as like an illusion, but not an illusion. An illusion is something that is not actually occurring, but it is actually occurring in our life and we're having an experience of it. But since we don't have a framework to see it clearly, to see it within reality, it's like an illusion, which means that our whole lives are rooted in wrong views. Our whole lives are fabricated. They're a concoction of what lies in reality in the same setting, except we simply don't see it clearly. Wrong view to right view. Is that clear? Is it?
Yeah, it gets clearer as you
as I go along.
As you as you pursue your discourse, it becomes clear bit by bit, you know?
You're good, because this really is the heart of the Dhamma, isn't it? It's going from, and so one of the, what concerned the Buddha upon his awakening is, how can you teach a mind that is stuck in those wrong views, that has this thick cloud of ignorance, this veil of ignorance in front of it? How can you open that up and see what's really there? You need a framework. You know, it's like the wizard and the Wizard of Oz. Don't look too hard at the man behind the screen. Well, we're the man behind the screen and we're playing all those games. We gotta open that screen. We gotta tear apart the fabrications and look at what's really occurring. And what's really occurring is occurring within our lives of fabrications. It truly is lifting the veil. We are, I say, and I don't remember exactly where, I think it's in the Truth of Happiness book, that it's like we're the magicians in our lives, but we don't know it. We're creating the illusion of life, of who we are, but it's not who we are. It's based on fabrications. However, the Buddha continues, when awakened ones are present in the world, they bring light into the world. They teach the Dhamma that brings an end to stress. The wise will listen and regain their senses. They will clearly know impermanence as impermanence. They will know stress as stress. They will know the unattractive as unattractive. It gets very simple and direct, doesn't it? What we need to do. We need to understand impermanence as impermanence. We need to simply see things clearly. We need to understand that stress is stress. And not make excuses for it or explain it away. We'll know what is unattractive is unattractive. Having developed right view, the Buddha continues, having developed right view, they abandon ignorance and bring to cessation all confusion, all deluded thinking, all stress and suffering. Having right view. That's the end of the sutta. Thank you. So I hope that's a good explanation of fabrications. Any questions? So, I don't think it's 100% clear to all of you.
No.
And this is one of those teachings, that the teaching leads the way, but the experience is what brings the understanding. And so as we continue to develop the Eightfold Path as the framework for recognizing our fabrications, we'll start to see this more clearly. A conversation I had with Lorna last week, and actually kind of the conversation we had coming back from the retreat. You first have to hear this is how human beings learn. We learn first intellectually a concept, an understanding, and then we start applying it to our lives. This sutta is like that. It's a very simple and direct sutta, but because a mind rooted in ignorance will create very powerful but subtle strategies to ignore its own ignorance. The fabrications we create will follow the same way. But it is within a fabricated mind that with the framework of the Eightfold Path, we can recognize and abandon fabrications. Just as the Buddha concluded that. We will know impermanence as impermanence. We'll know stress as stress. We'll know the unattractive as the unattractive. And so what is the unattractive? The unattractive is anything impermanent that we attach ourselves to and insist that it be permanent. And that is just about anything. It's any object, event, view, or idea that we identify the self with. Because if we identify the self with it, we're saying that it's attractive to us, or I'm attracted to it. But if it's impermanent, it's unattractive. Unattractive in the sense that it's fleeting, that it doesn't last. And if we attach ourselves to it, we're setting ourselves up for more confusion, more deluded thinking, and ongoing stress. So let's go around the room and see where we've left this. Lorna, how are you today?
Good, thank you. It's nice to hear a new sutta. Very good. Yeah, had a complete understanding of what you were saying, but in a way there's a lot of resistance to what you were saying as well.
Yeah.
You know. I don't understand when it's my long-term goal and my long-term wish for myself not to get caught up in distractions. That's what I want. But it doesn't seem to make any difference to still get caught up in distractions. And I know this is the cycle that the Buddha talks about. You wonder why. You know, when you explain it and it becomes, even though this sutra is a bit new, but in a vague sort of way, it becomes obvious. Obvious is the problem here. And we create our own problem, but we can't stop the problem. It's frustrating that we all sort of get caught up in our fabrications and we believe them, and they take ourselves out of the present time, which is not good, and we don't want to do this, but we keep on doing it. And I find that sort of side of it very frustrating, really. It's nice to hear a sutta that actually does concentrate on the fabrications, because quite a lot of the suttas are based from, I'm not going to say explaining it, but pointing out the problem, and then taking it from there on the awakening side. There aren't many suttas that talk about the problem of getting caught up in your distractions and fabrications, and this sutta sort of really just talks about that. That's a bit of a change from some of the other sutras that you teach more regularly. So that was you should incorporate it, because it makes the balance. You can see the balance that we're trying to achieve. Thank you.
Yeah, the first noble truth could almost as accurately be described as there is distraction, as there is dukkha, because it's the preoccupation with dukkha, with stress, that creates this ongoing confusion and deluded thinking. If it wasn't for that distraction, we would immediately recognize it. So the Buddha teaches meditation for concentration. You know, it's the antidote to distraction. And then from a increasingly developing concentrated mind, we can then apply the Eightfold Path to achieve just what you're talking about. And the conclusion of this sutta points to how to deal with the frustration of having to keep at it. Because the frustration of dealing with the distraction, when we understand impermanence will end, won't it? As long as we have this framework of the Eightfold Path, we'll get to know stress and end it. We'll learn what is unattractive and see it clearly. But it's a process, isn't it? That's the Buddha. The Buddha didn't teach anything magical or mystical. He didn't teach anything that if we do something enough times, it'll just, we'll be zapped awake, and it doesn't work that way. But when I first realized that, and I can clearly remember when the thought hit me that, wait, this is up to me. I would say for the first time in my life, I really did feel empowered, because I understood that this is something that a human being did, and his teachings are still here for me to learn, and I have a mind that can understand this. Not that I have any special kind of mind. It's a human mind. Anybody can do this. When we realize that, and this is really what it means by taking refuge, each and every one of us has within us the wherewithal to do this. All that we have to do is follow instructions. You know? That doesn't mean that it is easy at times, but it is simple. But we're always coming up against our mind's resistance, our fabrication's resistance to recognizing. Another way that I say that is we want to continue to ignore our own ignorance. That's what the Buddha awakened to. Dependent origination says that it is ignorance that is a condition that gives rise to fabrications and then to all manner of confusion, delusion, and suffering. So everything the Buddha taught is directed towards that initial ignorance and ending it. Thank you. Jen, good to see you this morning.
It's good to see you. Good to see everybody. I thought the word perversion definitely works in certain contexts for a fabrication. Actually, anytime I hear a new sort of word with regard to discussing this practice, it's, you know, helpful, because I feel like there's a lot of times not enough words to explain.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're talking to other people who don't have the framework, but you can still talk about this without the framework.
Yeah.
With other people. So yeah, there's definitely, you know, sometimes it's because you're pulling a lot of different things into your interpretation of what's happening, and that to me would be more of a fabrication. Or anatta's pulling a lot of other things into interpreting what's occurring right now that causes the stress. And sometimes it's just the resistance that anatta has to seeing what's occurring or aspects of what's occurring, and or wants to see things occurring that actually aren't occurring.
Yeah.
And that's creating an altered view of what's occurring, which would definitely be a perversion.
Yeah.
What Lorna said, because the word orientation came into my head, it really helps, this teaching is a reminder that the stress that we experience is about your orientation, what you are using to perceive reality. And if you are agitated, then you are not oriented correctly to what's occurring. What's perceiving what's occurring is ego.
Yeah.
Because we have these minds that we have to use to navigate the world, and they have this propensity to, anatta has propensity to show up and take over and be confusing us.
Yeah.
Good.
That's a great word, orientation.
Yeah.
If when you're oriented from wrong view, what are you going to see?
Right.
It's not based in reality. Thank you. Becky, good to see you this morning.
Good to be here. I feel like when I keep working at it, That's a really great word, Jeff. And that's how I've been all week. This week. And I find that I keep going back. I keep trying to figure out why certain things happened. And I know that that's my anatta, my ego. I know that intellectually, but I can't. I mean, you say, oh, it's so simple, you just have to get into right view. Well, guess what? It's not simple.
Well, I didn't say, I said it was simple, but not easy.
I mean, you know, you say right view, you might as well say, go to the moon. And I realize that I'm really relatively new to this for most of you that are here. And I'm not giving up, but I'm just saying that that's been my experience this week. Very difficult. I've meditated, but not too many breakthroughs or anything like that. Not that I'm looking for breakthroughs, but I mean to just get my mind to be calmer has not really, I've not really been able to do that. And I, you know, I'm thinking maybe this is, you know, this is something that's happening, and if I realize it's impermanent and keep working at it, that it may be that thing, that an insight is on the horizon, and that's why I'm just having trouble getting there. Or maybe I'm still thinking about it wrong. I don't. Or maybe it doesn't matter if I'm thinking about it wrong. I should just be okay with it. Meditation here today was better. I did feel like I was really deeply into the meditation here. But a little bit of a calmer mind when I came out, but not, I mean, I'm just going on now. That's it.
Thank you, Becky. You said a lot. That all relates directly to fabrications too. One of the end result of fabrications is feeling stress in the body or in the mind, you know, and aggravation. And that wall that you're talking about is the psycho-emotional effect of clinging to wrong views. It's holding on to views that feels like you can't go any further. That's just a common occurrence. And you know, you kind of hit it at the end, it's temporary. The only thing that can stop you from getting past that is to kind of give up, and I know you're not going to give up. Remember the Nagara Sutta, where the Buddha talks about just what you're talking about right now, just prior to his awakening. And when you read how the Buddha describes the feedback loop that he describes it in almost excruciating detail, didn't he? But he continued, and he described coming out of it as a breakthrough of understanding. That's a powerful word, isn't it? He broke through his own ignorance. He broke through clinging to views. He broke through that wall. And then he taught that he was a self-awakened one. He used that term over and over again to reassure the rest of us that we can do the same thing. But again, it's simple, but it's not easy. You've learned, one of the things that I've seen develop in you is the ability to be very gentle with yourself. That's what we all need, that to get through times like this, because what we're letting go of is like foam on the ocean, but it sure feels like a tidal wave when it's coming at us, doesn't it? And what do? Keep developing the Eightfold Path and keep meditating. Because it's that anchor of, in meditation, at least momentarily over and over and over again, uniting the mind and the body. We're bringing ourselves back to what's occurring. And that keeps us from being continually distracted by that blockage that we want to overcome. Thank you for bringing that up today. Tommy, good to see you again.
Good morning and hello. Hello, everyone. It's a process.
It is.
It's a process. And I actually remember a similar dissertation a while back. I mean, to me, when you bring up points of maggots and things of that nature, that impermanence is, you got to, one, personally, I don't tend to think about those things, but they're real.
Yeah.
Mighty real,
yeah.
And they're getting realer all the time. So just stepping into that framework, into that headspace, and looking around a little is healthy.
Yeah.
Is healthy and important to gain perspective. And that can actually be your friend, because it's not somebody that I walk with. So if you walk with it a little while. I've developed such intense stress. I've lived with it my whole life in different aspects, everything I do and everything I, that I've now actually established or found out, is a better word, that I have huge cortisol issues, stunning cortisol issues.
Mm.
So it's not because I'm so constantly in stress so constantly dealing with it that it's now subconscious and it's formulating in my body,
yeah.
Like to the point I can't stand up. And I'm like, this is really bad. This is really bad. So I'm trying to now deal with it in medical ways of mitigation. Exercise has always been my mitigation of that because I am aware of it. But you can feel it just like a freight train going right through you, and
yeah.
To the point of listen, it's chemical, so it's not the old fashioned stress way. Oh gosh, it's boom.
Yeah.
Now it's manifested into a totally different animal, which is a bad thing.
Yeah.
Which is a bad thing. But I mean, there's no point in my life that I've been more active in my tool belt, my toolkit of things to relieve issues, stress, whatever, more consistent, more self, well, I've probably been more self-loving, but, I'm in that strike zone, certainly in the strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all the other, I mean, they're wonderful, it's a wonderful category of four. What's real beauty, and I've always been very fortunate and able to attach myself to that beauty and joy of life. Finding it in the arts, I mean, very present. That's what I work towards every day. So whether that's God's grace or, flowers or a beautiful day like this, it's evident. It's evident, And what I had found out the last couple of years is what darkness is. And that's also that great Henry James quote about life is a battle, and it talks about how evil is hidden but transparent at the same time, and it's a process. I'll go back to my initial. It's a process, and I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Tommy. You made reference to that meditation on eternal grounds. And, you know, that could be misunderstood that, well, the Buddha's teaching that we shouldn't have any feelings about that death. And it's really just the opposite. The teaching is just to recognize that death is a part of life. And to be able, and I made reference to to be able to be meaningfully present, mindfully present, when it occurs. Mm. Because, it's going to occur to our loved ones, too. And that's a well-concentrated mind then feels whatever is appropriate to feel when it feels it. We're not detached from it. We're completely immersed in life as life occurs. That's important. And just to make reference, and people understand, cortisol is a chemical that's released in the body from stress, and it's not good to have that. Meditation has been proven to help moderate that cortisol response too. Mm-hmm. So keep meditating. Jay, good to see you this morning.
Good to see everybody. Good to see you. A whole bunch of things in here rang my chimes because they apply to me in many ways. The generalized stress and anxiety that we have, emails and electronics, and I think we probably lead a much more complicated life if you look at it one way than they did back a couple thousand years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They were worried about diseases that were very basic that they couldn't deal with. Famines, things like that, that they had no way to deal with. There's always the anxiety that goes throughout our history as people of, strangers coming in from somewhere and murdering everybody in your village. So, you can look at it there. But how I relate, I guess, to all this anxiety, at the moment I have something going where our daughter's coming to visit us next week, and we're expecting to spend some time on a boat that we have at the shore that's big enough to stay on, and that's what we use it for. We don't really travel. But one of the engines died last fall, and it was supposed to have been fixed and back in by the time she shows up next week, so that we can spend time there and, use the base of operations. Mm. But the guy who rebuilt it didn't get it done yet, and the guy who's supposed to put it in has not gotten it yet. So there's a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety about that. But then there's this whole business of, I've got to just let go of getting upset about it and figure whatever it happens. If it's not ready, we'll do other stuff. We always have a good time, whether it's going in the kitchen and, cooking up something, or going for a walk and looking at mushrooms or things that we see. So I've got to, get to the point here, and I'm doing better at it, to say, the boat isn't me, even though it's big and showy and whatever else. I didn't realize when I thought that I had to have this thing 8-9 years ago, planned on it and got it, and I've had it for 7 years, and the tail's wagging the dog at this point. It's given me all this anxiety and stuff, and the amount of pleasure that we get is like, there's 10 pounds of anxiety and stress to 4 ounces of eventual pleasure on the boat, sitting there in the sun and, enjoying it. So, all this stuff, it rang my chimes on all kinds of different levels. I'm trying to improve. And the other thing that I'm trying to improve that I'll throw in there is to be less oriented to things, get rid of some of the stuff, and I'm planning on that. I'm trying to. Deal more with people and their issues and problems, see people, who are suffering, who are in pain and are not doing real well. The other day when I took my visit to the old age home there, one of the women who I really like to talk to had a terrible cold. She's lying there with her head on the table in the all-purpose room, and I just felt terrible about that, so I'm seeing that continually. I'm able to help some of those people just by being there, visiting with them, spending a couple minutes as company, So I'm trying to shift to something better from something more materialistic. So again, this was, you could have tailored this class to my situation very nicely, and did.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, it is, ultimately, it's a little bit of a difficult teaching, but it also is very practical, isn't it? when you look, it's easily applied when you look at it in the right light. So thank you. Lisa, good to see you this morning. How are you?
Good to see you too, John. My thanks.
Good.
Well, your teaching today was extremely profound. And well said. So I'm understanding that in, you know, the intellectual part of it. And I realized in the beginning, and I think I talked about this early on, was first I understand something in my head, like the intellectual part of it, understanding the concept. But it's a real leap of faith and daunting to go through the process of incorporating that and feeling it. My mind is always going in a thousand different directions, so meditation really helps get everything off my mind. And so do some of the things I do where for an hour, if I'm doing Tai Chi or yoga, I don't think about anything else. And it's really wonderful because I'm concentrating on what I'm doing. The human mind is really, that word, we're using the word perversion, because I think about the word perverse, and the human mind is really perverse. It can easily destroy our mind can destroy ourselves. It can also save us. But how to get that under control? Coming here, reading, talking about it. Also, the word, we become so invested in the effort and the time and all these things that have made us in bad ways of who we are. That investment, don't want to be, hey, I have all this time and effort and everything into all this and, you know, making things solid. And it's hard to drop.
Yeah.
Like being a mother. I'm a mother, I have two daughters, and one hasn't spoken to us in 2 years. So how do I go on when I've always, referring to the kids. So I was very invested in being a mother, but that's exploded. So where did that leave me? Meditating. Thinking better thoughts, and moving ahead. It's just that word. You can be invested in so many different ways in something, and you think it's the solid thing. It's the foam on the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I mean, another word for being invested is clinging to it. We're creating a self-referential view. And as we deepen our concentration, it doesn't mean that a situation that is inherently sorrowful is not anymore. It's just that we stop reacting to it. The Bhadrakarata Sutta, the Buddha concludes that sutta by saying we gain the ability to think what we want to think when we want to think it, which simply means that our thoughts are appropriate to what's occurring. That's the essence of not losing your mind. And you use the word destroyed. The Buddha, in this sutta, the translation from the Pali to the English is they destroy themselves by their fabrications. And we literally do that. Thank you, Lisa. Mary, good to see you this morning. How are you?
Good to be here. Accepting life as it occurs, basically. Mm-hmm. And I remind myself that I have to be content in my mind is not at peace and not fight my mind.
Yeah.
And if my mind's not at peace, that's what it is. And I find when I reconcile that, I can settle down, and the meditation helps immensely. Walking helps immensely. I hope this whole class in general is really, really helpful. Thank you for
being. Thank you for being here. Yeah, the simple way of stating the goal is we learn to be at peace with less than peaceful mind states. It doesn't mean that we create a mind state that there's never any notice of things occurring. That would be a teaching on becoming a robot. It's not that. Mm-hmm. So we think what we want to think when we want to think it, to what's appropriate, which is marvelous. I mean, it's remarkable. And then to be able to live life with the understanding, the Buddha described dukkha as birth is stressful, sickness is stressful, aging is stressful, death is stressful, not getting what is wanted is stressful, getting what is undesired is stressful. Well, that's life, isn't it? So when we understand stress is stress, it's all part of the game, isn't it? But when we're at peace with it, then we get to live our lives at peace no matter what's occurring. You know, that's a fully mature, it's a description of a fully mature human being, isn't it? Being at peace with what's occurring. So it's a marvelous and concise teaching that really gets to the heart of the matter. Probably the best way to apply it is as we find ourselves getting caught up in things, try to see the impermanence in what we're caught up in, or recognize the stress that's there, knowing stress is stress, or recognizing that this is a wrong view that I'm holding of self that's creating this stress, or to actually see what is truly unattractive as unattractive, being willing to see it, seeing life as it is. It's really the key. So thank you for a great class. Our retreat is on. It begins September 20th. The registration is on the website. There's a Becoming Buddha app is out. I don't know how many of you have heard that, but you can just, it makes accessing the website much quicker and easier. Just click on the icon on your smart device and you're there. So. And there's info on the website about installing if you have any difficulties. We'll close with metta, as we always do. So find your relaxed meditation posture. And gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And again, take a moment to become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class this morning. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.